You're listening to the Let's Be Real podcast. Now, here are your hosts, Andy Hughes and Denise Russo.
Our guest right now is a tremendous leader on and off the baseball diamond. He was selected ninth overall in the 1975 Major League Baseball draft and played 10 seasons. He then went on to become the manager of the Colorado Rockies from 2002 to 2009, as well as the Pittsburgh Pirates from 2011 to 2019. He won the National League Manager of the Year Award in 2013 with the Pirates and led the Rockies to a World Series appearance in 2007. In addition to his on-field accomplishments, he is an outstanding member of the community as a loving father and husband as well. It is a pleasure to welcome Clint Hurdle to the Let's Be Real podcast. Clint, thank you very much for joining Denise and I. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. Denise, nice to see you. Andy, thanks for the opportunity. And to the city of Pittsburgh and anybody watching, hello. We're all good here on the west coast of Florida. We're good. We're healthy and we're happy.
You miss the snow?
No.
I guess you were used to going to spring training around this time for a while, so you were probably used to getting that escape a little bit.
I would normally, ever since we were the Pirates, we would actually leave right before the second semester of school. We would take our kids out of school in Pittsburgh and put them in school down here for about 4 months. I was here for three. The family stayed together that way. It kept us cohesive and connected. So I've been a fan of the warm weather for spring training for many years. And now I'm actually engaged in warm weather spring training without the games for the second consecutive spring. And it's been an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was actually thinking about it. My family, we used to visit Bradenton in spring training a lot. And I was thinking back. So I actually have a picture of you and I from 10 years ago. I think it might have been one of your first spring trainings with the Pirates. It was in 2011. And now fast forward 10 years, here I am interviewing you on a podcast. It's just crazy to think, as I was looking back at that picture of you and I, and you were extremely generous with your time back then. I know you obviously have a lot going on, but you always made a lot of great time for fans, and just really appreciative that you were able to come on. And just funny how life works sometimes like that.
The synchronicity of life, you know, the mysteries that come with it are what makes it special. Because we truly have an opportunity to blaze a different path or a new path just about every day. 2011 was my first year with the Pirates. And one thing I was able to keep in place for every, I want to say almost every home spring training game, I would exit out the locker room and I would walk down the right field line and I would autograph every person that asked for an autograph all the way down to the dugout. I did that every spring training game for the entire time I was there. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to see a lot of smiles. Short story that you'll laugh at. Two or three years into it, I'm going down the line, signing people. Hey, Clint, you know, you get to meet people that are coming to all the games. You kind of develop a small relationship, short-rooted, but still a relationship. And all of a sudden, you know, this young kid puts up his book and another picture, and he says, "Sir, will you sign these?" I sign them, and it was a ball in a program. And later on, I can see one of the players goes by me while the kid runs away to get the player. As I get down there, the player's still signing, and the father's now with the player. And the dad goes, "Oh, this is great. You got a player." He goes, "Yeah, I got a few players now. I got some old guy earlier, but I was really hoping to get the player."
Wow. He had no idea what was in his hand. So I have a question for you based on that. So, Clint, you've been in baseball, or baseball's been a part of your life for greater than, I would guess, 50 years from the time you started playing as a little boy. And I was reading about how your grandfather had an opportunity to play, although for family reasons couldn't go into the majors. And then your dad missed an opportunity to be able to serve us in the military. Thank you for his service. And you were a rookie, considered the best hitting prospect, and spent the majority of your career playing and managing and helping others live out their dreams. So I sort of have a two-part question for you as we get started here. The first is that I noticed that you were a star quarterback in high school, not very far from where I live here in Florida, and also a great baseball player. So how did you pick that one thing that you love, and how did you know when to walk away from that thing you loved when you decided to retire?
Great questions. Really, really good questions. First and foremost, third generation opportunity to play professional baseball. Yeah, my grandfather He was the only boy in a family of eight, and his father died. He went to work at the Ford factory at the age of 15. My dad was offered a contract. My grandfather was 3 days later, his dad passed. So he couldn't move on the contract. His contract was with the Cubs. My dad was offered a contract by the Reds. 4 days after he was offered the contract by the Reds, he was drafted in the military. So there was angst, remorse, my opportunity. It's not like we kept waiting for a shoe to drop or something to happen. It was seamless. I had the opportunity. That didn't fuel my decision. It was easy for me, Denise. It was easy for me. I was pretty good football player. I had scholarship offers, major colleges. There's people back in Merritt Island that today will still tell you I was a better football player. I was a baseball player. I went back to my high school last Thursday to throw out a first pitch to celebrate the 7th anniversary of a field dedication. They've named the high school field after me. Wow. And there's still old men telling me, you should have played football. You should have played football. And I would say, well, you know, the baseball thing worked out pretty good.
I'd say.
But we'd let it go because I should have played football. I loved to practice baseball. I did not love to practice football. I was a Friday night football player. I was a quarterback. I wore the red jersey. They couldn't hit me. When the games, I'd run out of bounds if it got hot. I was basically a drop back passer. We audibled at the line. We ran a no huddle offense before anybody knew there was such a thing as a no huddle offense. My dad loved the sport of football. Part of me played the game of football for my father because the joy that he would derive from it. Baseball, I'd go practice anytime, anywhere, three guys, eight guys, you know, whatever it was. So the choice when it came down to, you know, a scholarship, a football scholarship or a baseball scholarship, I was able to hybrid the situation. I had two schools that would actually allow me to play both. All the other schools, the football school, said no baseball. Football scholarship only. The University of Miami and the University of Virginia would allow me to play both. So I ended up opting for the University of Miami, signed a letter of intent, and I was going to go play both. When I was drafted in the first round, I think the 9th pick of the nation by the Royals, dream come true since the age of 5. You know, at the age of 5, my dad asked me a question that changed my life. He said, you want to go outside and play catch? At the age of 5, I was hooked. So it was easy for me at the end of the day. My family gave me the blessing, my dad, my mom, you know, go live your dream. You only get one shot at it. There were challenges along the way. There's tremendous work to be done. There was tremendous fun to be had. There's disappointment. There's heartache. There was a lot of life that happened in between, but the 45 years I had in uniform professionally, priceless. The years playing up to that were just so much fun. To walk away, it wasn't as hard as I envisioned it. You know, because I was getting towards the end. I would be retiring this year, even if I would have had the opportunity to stay on. It didn't end well. The last 3 months I managed in Pittsburgh were the hardest 3 months of the 16 years of my managerial career, just because of the friction we were having in some areas. The overall experience in Pittsburgh, fantastic. The players in that clubhouse, so many of them were so good. The organization, whether it was Nutting, Huntington, Coonley, Kyle Stark, fantastic people to work with and learn from. At the end of the day, my mother always told me, to this day she still tells me, give it everything you got. It's the last thing she tells me on the phone. For 45 years, Denise, I give it everything I had. So when I was fired, I sat back. My wife and I got away for a while, and we heard a lot of noise, a lot of narrative. What's next? What you should do next? A lot of people still had opinions on how I should run my life because I was getting help managing all the time I was in Pittsburgh, whether it's a cab driver, whether it's, you know, a waitress, you know, my barber. Everybody could do the job, you know, better than me. But I was still getting narrative, and my wife and I had a sit down. I got offered a couple opportunities, and one of them became real. The San Diego Padres offered me the hitting coach job, a 2-year contract, a very good contract. To continue on in uniform. And I got the contract like before I landed the plane after the interview. And it was a guy I've known, AJ Preller. We go way back, 2010 with the Rangers when I was a hitting coach. There was a lot of good fit to it. And I can remember walking back, driving home, see, I got a contract, waking my wife up at midnight and saying, hey, hon, you know, we just can wait till the morning, but I got a contract from him. Well, what is it? And we talked about it. And all I can remember was her going, well, You know, that we, San Diego, we're in Pitt, we can't go any farther west, so that's good. Spring training, Arizona, so that's, she just kept saying, we'll figure it out. We'll work it out. The kids and I will adjust. We'll make it happen. We'll do what needs to be done. And I just kept hearing this, and I finally, there's this little guy in there going, buddy, why don't you make the adjustment this time? Mm-hmm. You got two kids in high school. For 28 years that I've known Carla, I've been home 2 weeks out of every month. I've been out of the house 2 weeks out of every month. Mm-hmm. Madison's 18, Kristen's 16. 2 weeks out of every month, I'm out of the house. I'll never get that time back. Mm-hmm. However, what can I do to kind of force multiply the time I have now? Mm-hmm. And it became crystal clear to me it was just time to put the uniform away. And it was time to come back and be a husband and a dad and a neighborhood friend and whatever else this journey is taking me on this chapter of life. It wasn't that hard at all. And there have been no hard tugs. There's been no pulls. There's been no angst. There's been no, oh, it's spring training. What am I going to do? No, there's been none of that. I've learned more about my family in the last 18 months than I did in the previous 5 years.
That's beautiful. Andy, you know I have a whole list of questions, so how about you go next?
Yeah, I was going to say, Clint, you know, kind of going back to your playing career, I was looking and I saw that you were on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the 70s there, and I know that was right a little bit after you were drafted. I wanted to talk to you about that because I know at that time there probably weren't as many magazines around as there are today. I noticed that it said $1 on it. So it's crazy how things have changed in that way. But looking back on that, you know, having that experience and having those expectations, how difficult was that to, you know, try to live up to those expectations as a player that was drafted so high like that?
I had no idea what I was walking into. There's no, you know, now we have rookie school they go to, rookie classes, where they send the, you know, your top-rated prospects to a seminar, a week-long project where you get experience, seminars, questions, think tanks, just how you work through that, how you process social media, how you process media, how you process your life off the field, boundaries on the field. There was none of that. That's not an excuse. There was just none of that available.
Yeah.
To your point, one of the funniest stories of my life was the photo shoot happened. They photoed 25 players. And the photo shoot took way more time than I thought it was going to take because I ended up spending a lot of time with Hans, who was the photographer. A guy named Mary Keith wrote the article. But I go, so how long will this take? He goes, well, I'm probably going to shoot pictures of you for an hour and a half. I'm like, what?
Whoa.
An hour and a half, he goes, Clint, the first three or four roles you're going to be posing. The next three or four roles you're going to try not to pose. Finally, you're going to get to a sweet spot where I'm going to shoot a bunch of good stuff, and then you're going to get tired and bored and bad, and it'll be a bunch of bad pictures. So, well, I got to find that. He goes, I got to take a lot of film, a lot of shots just to get a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we went out and did it. Willie Wilson also got photographed, another rookie on the Royals team. They never told anybody. You know, that was a big secret with SI, who's going to be on the cover. That week, nobody knew. And it was boom. Well, you mentioned it, Andy, not a lot of magazines out. I went to a 7-Eleven that morning to get my breakfast of champions, which was a honey bun and a quart of milk. I went to the same 7-Eleven every morning in Fort Myers, grabbed a honey bun, quart of milk, would drive to the park. And I put the honey bun on the counter. I put the quart of milk on the counter. There's three magazines on the counter of the 7-Eleven. That's where the magazine rack was. Time, Newsweek, Sports Illustrated. I was a good student. I'd see Time, Newsweek, I'd look at it, who's on the cover, maybe something. All of a sudden, I went to Sports Illustrated. It was me. And I looked at the clerk, and he was younger than me. I think I was 19, and he was younger than me. He looked at me, and then he looked at the picture. I looked at the picture and looked at him. We both looked at each other, and I just walked out. I didn't take the honey bun. I didn't take the milk. I was paralyzed mentally. Because I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, and then your mind starts racing. This is on every cover. This is on. And when I got to the park, it became a thing. And, you know, actually, it probably became a thing the rest of the year because there's men in the major leagues for 10 years never get their picture on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And I'm going to go hit. And I probably got hit a few times just because, you know, pitched high and tight just because. It was a different era. It was a different time. Then from that point on, there was probably a little guy on my shoulder, you know, wanting to please everybody. And I found out over time that that's the quickest way to please nobody is to try and please everybody. Mm-hmm. So it provided a different set of challenges, a different set of obstacles. Some I worked through well, some I did not work through so well. And I could have used more help. I should have reached out at times for maybe some experience, strength, and hope from some other people. But us men, Denise, you may know this, most women do, that our egos are problematic. And the worst bit of advice a man can ever give himself is, I've gotten myself into this mess, I'll get myself out. I actually call it jackass mentality. And I was that guy. So there was a lot of complications that got worked through. There were some good, a lot of good things that happened as well, but it was different. It was just something different that happened that was an obstacle at times. It was a water slide at times. I just had to figure out which one it was. I learned a lot of valuable lessons from it though in the years after.
What a cool story. I can't even imagine walking into a store and seeing myself on the cover of such a important magazine, especially during those times. And you talked about challenges and obstacles, Clint. And for our listeners, listen, what an appropriate name does Clint have? Clint Hurdle. Uh-huh. And you've been a master at jumping over these hurdles so many times in your career. I'm just thrilled to have you here and have the opportunity to talk with you. You've worked with just so many organizations and cultures, Clint, whether it's the Royals or the Mets or the Reds, the Cardinals, the Rangers, the Pirates, the list goes on and on. What can you share with our listeners who are listening to this as people that are growing into their leadership skills and competencies about the importance of adapting to different team cultures and different management styles?
Yeah, I think the first thing that would come to my mind was one size doesn't fit all. Tradition can be a wonderful thing. Tradition can also be a vision killer. You know, we've always done it that way. That's why we're doing it this way. Well, times change, people change, mentalities change. My son and I had a conversation many, many years ago. He decided to go karate. He wanted to go to karate class. And remember the first day he came back, I go, okay, buddy, what do you got? He goes, Dad, they gave me this cool robe. Check the robe out. It's called an OB, da, 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 da. I knew a little bit, but I'm playing, you know, not smart. And I go, so how do you keep that thing from falling open? You know, he goes, oh, Dad, you get a belt. And he goes, check out the belt. He goes, it's a white belt. Well, my mentality, Denise and Andy, white belt means you know nothing. I mean, you're a beginner. You're like at the lowest ladder, you know, rung of the ladder. He goes, Dad, it's white. It, and he's looking at me, it means I know nothing. It means I get to learn everything. This is so cool. And I sat back and I go, wow, how about that lens flip? I'm looking at it. We use the same words. I know nothing. I'm saying he knows nothing. He's going, I know nothing.
Yeah.
I get to learn everything. And I think from that point on, I had it at times, but I really grasped it. The first year I walked into the Pirates to be a lifelong learner. And Bernie Holiday, our mental skills coach, talked about the white belt mentality within our organization. We used it within our coaching structure, with our players, to always be available to learn, to always have a desire to learn from others. If I'm the smartest guy in the world, I used to tell my staff, I've got two problems. One, I need a new room. The other, I need a new staff. I should be the most experienced and maybe the most intelligent in some areas. Mm-hmm. However, if I'm in charge of the pitching and I'm in charge of the fielding, we're going to have issues. Searage needs to be the smartest guy with the pitching. Cora needed to be the smartest, or Leyva, whoever had the infield. And you need to lock arms with that. You need to embrace that. It doesn't mean he's better than you, Ryan, but no, together we're much better mm-hmm. when we work together. So throughout the time, I first started getting those learning principles and leadership principles in Colorado with one of the best mentors I ever had, Kelly McGregor, probably the most impactful man in my life outside of my father. But he talked to me about making a difference, about being a difference, about creating a wake, whether you realize it or not, about being managerial on the field and off, about leading others through actions, not through words. So my reach to everybody else, show up with a notepad. Show up and do everything you can to use your eyes and ears first, and your voice as a third option.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, you know, and thinking about leadership and, you know, all of these things, communication is obviously a big thing when it comes to managing. You know, you do need to be, you need to show clarity and you need to communicate with others. Obviously in baseball, that can be challenging because you do have different people, different backgrounds. They're all different in their own ways. They all learn differently. How do you kind of manage that as a manager, or maybe what are some tips that you have that can help future leaders communicate with others with different backgrounds, different things like that?
Well, for guys of my age, you've got to take the mentality that maybe you had as a kid where, you know, you respected your coach. You respected, there's certain people you gave respect. Things have changed. Kids want to know why they need to respect you now. They want to hear your voice, hear your message, then figure out for themselves whether you're worthy or whether you have something that they're attracted to or they're connected to. That's just the way it is. And that's okay. You know, just because used to be an answer that you'd get from your mom and dad, because I'm your mom, because I'm your coach. You can rip that one up and throw it up in the air now. No, here's why. You know, here's my experience. Here's my reasoning. Here's what I've tried and it's failed. Here's what I've done to have success. You throw it out there to give them a chance to work through it on what may serve them best. The first thing you need to do for me, this has always been my game plan, is earn their trust. Because without trust, there's no connection. You'll never have an opportunity to truly coach somebody until they trust you.
Clint, how do you build trust in a team? I remember reading that you were talking about at one time you had taken over a team. It was, I think, in the AAA league. So correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but you were talking about how you had three groups of players and really almost like two groups of players. There was a group of players that were a little bit disconnected and a group of players that were connected. And the way that you described it was one third of your players were people who thought they should have been in the big leagues and they just weren't. There was another group of players who were in the big leagues and got moved down and didn't even want to be there because they felt like they shouldn't have been moved down. But then you had that third group, that white belt group that you described that Christian said when he started karate, which were the people that were just thrilled to be there. How difficult is it as a manager to balance the talent of your team and keep them engaged, inspired, and trusting you as the leader, but also being able to work together?
It's another great question. It's one of the ways that you either establish traction with your leadership, you establish cohesion within the clubhouse, you attempt to help build the culture. It's getting one to acknowledge it. You get the elephant out of the room and you have an early conversation. Hey, there's a bunch of you here that don't think you should be here, that you're better than this. I get it. You're here though. You know, my job will be to help you leverage, hot term now, leverage that skill set and your playability to get you moved up. There's some of you that have been up and moved down, and you're just angry. I get that. I've been that guy. Matter of fact, I've been both these guys so far. The guy that thought he should have been up, the guy that now wasn't up. Don't be a self-fulfilling prophet. Yeah, you know, because then you won't go back up. You know, you don't play well, you're not going to go back up. The only way to get back there is to play well. Mm-hmm. Get that in the frontal lobe of your brain right now. Being angry, you know, pity party, resentments, all those. I used to tell them, walk out back, dig a hole, whether mentally or physically, put everything in the hole, cover up, bury it, and walk away, and you're free of it. Mm-hmm. And I said, you guys that are happy to be here, rub off on these other guys. Maybe they can remember what it was like the first time they got here when they were happy to be here, because mm-hmm. positivity is contagious. Yeah. You know, it can be infectious. And it's not Pollyanna positivity. It's just positive. We get to play a game today. Truly, everybody supposedly in this clubhouse loves to play the game of baseball. Act like it. Let's all act like it together, because the better we are together as a club, the more success we're going to have, the more success we have as a team. Guys get called up. Guys get rewarded with better contracts. All the good fruit comes from that, but it's about putting down the weight that you're carrying and then just locking arms together and go play like you did when you were six in the backyard with your wiffle ball bat. Go out there and play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because you do have a unique perspective of being on both sides of those tough conversations between a player and a manager. And also every leader at some point, they're going to have tough conversations. And as you as a manager, I'm sure you had a lot of those where, yeah, maybe you do have to send someone down to the minor leagues and maybe they have a minor league option. You know, I know that's big in baseball where if you have an option, they can send you back to the minor leagues. There's all of these things that might be out of your control at some point, but you do have to have these conversations to send a player down. I would imagine that having that perspective of being on the other side, like being the player, has helped you as a manager as well, just to kind of relate to the players in those situations.
I really believe you are prepared for your future through your past if you've paid attention. Mm-hmm. There were times I paid attention. There were times I didn't pay attention. We are given a lesson in life. And it starts happening early on. But I started picking up on this later than I should have. But you get a lesson. Life gives you a lesson, whatever it might be, on the field, off field. If you learn the lesson, you know what your reward is? You get another lesson. If you don't learn the lesson, you know what you get? You get the same lesson over and over again, wrapped differently, shaped differently. It's true. It plays out. It's real. It's one of the beautiful things of life. It's one of the things you can count on in life. I've experienced so much. I truly believe that that was part of why I was led and given the opportunity and shown favor to manage, because of the experiences I could share, the things I've experienced. I've been released. I've been traded. I've been good. I've been bad. Made all-star teams. Won batting titles. Hit homers. All that. I've never been elite at the major league level. The hardest conversations I had were the best players in our major league clubhouse because I would call them in. Andrew and I had the same conversation every April. Andrew would struggle every April. It didn't matter if he hit 500 in spring or 100 in spring. Come into April, he got out of the block slow. And we would sit down. And eventually, he'd find his way into the office and we'd have a conversation. And I'd say, buddy, this is the one thing I can help you with because I know it like is like the struggle. I don't know what it like to have the three gold gloves that you got or the three silver bats you got or the MVP. I got nothing on that. Can't help you there. This part, this hard part, I got. I'm in there with you. My job is to help you work through this and work out. I said, the one thing you have the opportunity to do now, which is really impactful, you have the opportunity to show every man in that clubhouse and every fan in those stands how you carry yourself when you don't play, when things aren't going. The true character that you have, the true integrity that you have, the way you respect the name on the front of the uniform, and the way you respect the name on the back of the uniform. For me, son, that is impactful. That is influential. That will, in and of itself, you keep carrying yourself the right way, your skill set's going to come back. Your skill set's going to find its way back. This is just one of those times when I think we get tested for different reasons to how we react, to show growth or to show immaturity. So walk tall. I'd say walk tall, shoulders back, look people in the eye, and go play.
You said before, Clint, that you get experience through bad judgment, and you've had a lot of experiences, good and bad, perhaps, but you've also been touted as somebody who's a very collaborative player and manager, and the importance of vision for someone's potential and the importance of solid mentorship is where I'd like to go next with the next question. You shared that in your past that you had a scout that sounds like he was a really great mentor, and he put you in front of the right people at the right time to get you the right opportunities, but you also were an important mentor to a young player, Josh Hamilton. So it's kind of a two-part question. The first is, how hard is it for qualified athletes who are not seen by scouts, or let's even say employees in a company as big as SAP with over 100,000 employees here, how hard is it to be able to feel like you get a chance? And second part of the question is, how important is it for people that are experienced, such as yourself, to reach out to mentor others rather than them waiting for someone to come to help them?
This is really good stuff because it's real. And obviously, let's be real, right? The name of the podcast. I told you earlier, I love that. That is one of the biggest challenges going on right now. It was going on before COVID. And COVID has just been a force multiplier for isolation, for silos, for feeling less than, for feeling not connected, for feeling... It's one thing to be, say, not connected, and it's another thing to be lonely. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of loneliness going on right now. So through my leadership, through my training, through my understanding, the second part of your question, it's always important, like in SAP, every group, every department has a head, right? Mm-hmm. That person is in charge of team morale, whether it's 100 people working with them side by side, whatever, or 50 or 10, they need to be a thermostat for them, not a thermometer. They need to be the one that's, you know, and have one-on-ones. It's hard, but you can have a one-on-one. It's not a Zoom conference every day with 50 people in your group. No, you know what? I need to get off this one. And then John, you and I need to connect, just you and I. We need to find a way. I talked about trust. The second thing that everybody wants is they want to know you care about them. Mm-hmm. Chick-fil-A put out a commercial years ago. You may have seen it. You haven't. If you haven't, you need to watch it. But it was their first, when they were putting their franchise together, the mentality they wanted their counter people behind the counters to have when people walked in. They'd show an older man walk in and the bubble would come over and said, just lost his wife of 37 years. They'd show a mother walk in with two kids. Father left 2 weeks ago. She's trying to figure it out. I mean, every race, different religions, all but coming in. That is real. Yeah. So that their perception behind the counter is, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I can to make this an enjoyable experience for you today. So in the department, you, whoever it is, they need to make your employees feel like they are connected. You've got to find ways. You've got to hunt those ways. You got to fight for those ways. You can't let them feel like they're untethered and they're just out in space. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a reach, a touch, yeah, emails are good. You know, texts are good. Zoom is better. On-sites are the best. Face-to-face, not FaceTime, face-to-face. Whatever you have, use. Never lose the fact of the human voice, the impactfulness of a human voice. Beats a text. Beats an email. We read emotion into email, whether the other person meant it or not. We can read emotion. The eyes we have filters all the reality of our world because what's going on with us, that's the way we read it. If I'm angry and you send me a text, I got a little anger reading your text. You probably had no anger when you sent it. You know, I'm picking it apart. I can tell more about you from your voice. And plus, when I'm looking at you, I can see whether you smile or not. Yeah. You know, your body language screams at me. Both of you. You know, mine screams. I'm a very demonstrative guy. People said if I tied my hands together, I couldn't talk. Probably true. We all need connection more than ever. And the one thing that COVID has done is it's given us multiple opportunities to find new ways to connect, find new ways to reprogram, recalibrate, rekindle, reignite our relationships. I believe with all my heart that when you can earn people's trust, when you can show them that you can care, then they'll give you a chance to coach them up. And then you can show them the magic that you can help them get better. Yeah. And that's what makes it come full circle. And that's when it becomes special.
So good. So good. Andy, you're up next.
Just to go off of that, I think COVID has made us realize how valuable time is. You know, a lot of people talk about financial things and money, but man, I mean, the most valuable gift you can give anyone, especially right now, is time. You know, even if it's like a 5 minute conversation, 15 minutes, whatever it is, that can make a huge impact. And what you just said there, I couldn't agree more with just spending time with people. You know, it's really important to hear that voice. And just have a conversation. How are things going? You know, is there anything I can help you with? That can really go a long way, especially right now when there are a lot of people that are just lonely right now, unfortunately. And anything that we can do to help with that area, whether it be a Zoom call like this, or as you said, Clint, obviously in person is always the best thing to do. But in this time, we definitely need to make time for that because I think there's just a lot of people right now that are lonely. And it's just, I mean, time is the most valuable gift.
And you touched on two subjects. For 10 years, 9 years in Pittsburgh, I'd read a book many years ago by Jimmy Page, Dan Britton, and John Gordon. It's called One Word. And the thought was to put one word down, make it your word for the year, not 20 resolutions January 1st. John Gordon and I are personal friends. We we stay in connection. Dan Britt and I, who works for SCA, he's a personal friend. But I brought this to my coaching staff, and every year that I was in Pittsburgh, we would write one word on a ball. And then in spring training, the coach would present the ball with his word on it, and then he would tell why he's picked that word and how he was going to develop exercises to become more impactful with that word, to make the word jump off the ball and become part of his life. Then we would share the ball once a week or a couple of homestands. We would trade balls. So I would have Euclides Rojas ball, and I'd see his word and kind of hold on. We would have a connection that week about my word, his word, or whoever you exchange with. We did that for years, and I've done that with many people. I actually do it with my sponsees in AA. I have time and on my side now where I'm actually actively engaged in the AA program more than I've ever been engaged. And I have three men I'm working with weekly. And I've had them come up with a word that we share and talk about. My word this year is attention. My word in the past has been time. I wasn't good enough with it to nail it down, Andy, the first time, because I could give you my time like right now, and underneath the table, maybe I got my phone. And you know, how many people do that in Zoom conferences? They're on the Zoom, your face is up, you can see me, you know, maybe you don't know I'm looking down, but I'm doing something else. And my wife has been so good with this, about just calling me out and redirecting me, helping me, setting boundaries. Attention had to be my next word because I didn't nail the time off. Yes, I gave you my time, but my attention wasn't tied to it. So now my word's attention, because it is the most valuable gift we can give anybody in whatever setting it is, for however long it is their undivided attention. So now one of the things I try and do is, if I'm in a social place with somebody, Florida's wide open, we can meet, we can go outside. If I'm sitting down, so I take my phone and I put it away from my reach. I don't keep it in my hand. I try and put my phone down every night at 8 o'clock. Our kids, our family, we set boundaries. I want to be the kind of person that when I walk into a room, people are happier when I walk in than when I walk out. I've had people in my life that I loved walking in my room. I loved it more when they walked out of my room. I loved when they left. I used to share with my coaches, the one guy I never want them to be was the oh no coach. And initially, I can remember a few of them, like, well, what do you mean the oh no coach? I said, well, you know who that is. I said, remember when you were a player and a certain coach would come walking your way, you'd drop your head and go, oh, no, here comes John. We've all had those people in our life. As soon as they come towards you, you know it's not good. Or you ask a guy how he's doing. Well, today I'm doing as good as I can. You know what? One day that may be true, but when that's the answer all the time, no. The oh no coach, you want people when they see you walking away, it's like, what has he got next? Man, when this guy shows up, I show up. And when he leaves, I got something from him in my pocket, or I got something from her in my pocket. When she's here, she just makes me feel better. You know, when she leaves, I feel better. I mean, that's my challenge to leaders and leadership and people. You know, my goal with my kids now every day is I want them to see dad, and I want them to be happy to see dad. The first 3 months I was home, it was crazy. I mean, they had never experienced dad home every day. Even in the off season, I'm gone 2 weeks. I'm gone. So the first 3 weeks, it just was absolutely weird. It was almost like having another puppy in the house, because one minute I'm maybe peeing in the corner, then I'm licking your face. And where do I have lunch? Where do I sit and watch TV? I've never been home this time of day. I'm never home this time of night. Slowly over time, we all poured into each other. We're working through it because they love me and they extended me some grace. And then I learned the boundaries. I learned my wife has rules and regulations that have worked for years when I wasn't around. I need to abide by those rules. I don't need to come back and recreate everything. I just need to be a team player. So that's what I've kind of done at home. Leadership opportunities still present themselves. You've got to be aware every day, because you never know when the next one's going to come. This one right here, our hope, all three of our hope, is that somebody will hear something that will resonate. They haven't heard it that way before. They could have been told it by other people. And don't ever be that person that says to somebody, well, I told you that a million times. How come you didn't listen to me? That's about you. That's your ego speaking right there. Be happy they finally learned it. Be happy that they got it from somebody. Maybe there was a reason why they never heard it from you, because you might have been that oh no coach, as soon as you came to him, they're like, oh God, he's going to tell me how to live. Tell me how to walk. Tell me how to chew. Tell me how to, who knows? If we can truly celebrate the successes of others and pull for the successes of others, it just gets better all over the place. One of the most enjoyable things I was able to experience in Pittsburgh, and it wasn't just the three-year run that we had in 13, 14, 15. There was a couple others. Our teams, they just celebrated each other's successes so wonderfully. Mm-hmm. They were so unselfish. They truly were committed to one common goal, and nobody cared who got the credit. And that is so incredibly rewarding. For the fans, it's rewarding. The fans can see it. They can feel it. They were owning it. You know, and that was probably the biggest takeaway for me. Wanted to bring a world championship, be a part of that. That didn't happen. However, some really good things did happen. And the fact that we were able to rebond that city with its ball club and break that streak of losing seasons and roll it into three playoff opportunities in a row. And to this day, I've been in three World Series as a player in 1980, as a coach in 2010, as a manager in 2007. Unfortunately, three times I finished second. But the play-in game, the wild card game in 2013 was the most incredible atmosphere and environment I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up because I was in the stands for that game, and it was just an incredible moment. My mom, huge baseball fan, she named me after Andy Van Slyke. So I've always had baseball in my blood my entire life. And as a Pirates fan, being in that stadium with her and just the atmosphere was unbelievable. And I'm forever thankful, you know, for everything that you did with that team. And you're right. Like, it was just that bond with the fans and the team. It was just so real. And it's hard to put into words sometimes that game. I've been to, you know, Stanley Cup final games and stuff like that, but I don't think anything will ever compare to that game in 2013, the atmosphere. And wow, that was just an incredible moment that I'll never forget. And it was really cool to just share it with my mom. And I know a lot of families too, they had, you know, grandfathers, grandmothers, mothers. You had three generations basically of Pirates fans going to that game and just having the night of their lives. And it was just an incredible time. So I kind of figured that was probably one of your proudest accomplishments because it was just an amazing night and one that I will definitely never forget.
Yeah, it pulled on the heartstrings so much more. World Series doesn't get any better than that. Yeah. Never won. Like I said, finished second three times. Similar situation in Colorado, though, was game 163 with the holiday slide at home. And the run at the end of the season to win 21 of your last 22 games to get to the World Series. I mean, I've been a part of some incredible, you know, sports accomplishments in cities where people weren't expecting them. You know, the run in Denver and Colorado that year to go in as National League champs. To this day, whenever I go back to Colorado and see that championship banner wave, I mean, the fan base, Rocktober. You know, abso-bucking-lutely. We've made words up around these situations that have been a part of because I truly get so much satisfaction out of seeing the smiles on other people. And when I first walked into Pittsburgh, I can remember in 2011, the first time we got back in town, I went up to all the season ticket sellers and told them one of the top goals on my list was to make their job easier. Because I could not imagine how hard that job had to be after two consecutive seasons of 112 total or 212 losses in 2 years. And you're going to call up people and try and sell season tickets in Pittsburgh. That's a hard job. And I told them one of my goals, one of my focus points was to make their job easier. And truly, Kelly McGregor gave me that mantra way back when. He said, your job as the manager is to make everybody's job easier. Just remember that. If you ever want to know what your job is, it's to make everybody's job easier.
This is a great segue to my last question. I wish we could stay with you all day. I have so many more questions, but what I heard you saying throughout our time together, Clint, is that you really focus on being a human being, not just a human doing. We're here to be. And one of the things that I read about you is that you focused one time with your dad on moving your mindset from something negative to something positive. And you actually have a daily ritual in the mornings of prayer and yoga and reading, but also spent sending out some daily inspirations to people that want to learn more. Tell us a little bit more about Make a Difference Today. And also, why is it important for you to start your day this way? And where do you get your strength coming from?
Really good stuff. My dad is my best. My dad is my best friend to this day. I said last Thursday we went, you know, back to my high school together. He was my best man twice. The marriage that lasted the longest, he wasn't my best man. I always remind him of that as well, too. He's always told me the truth. He's challenged me. He's never been a bobblehead. He's been a truth teller. He's been an arm lifter and a hope broker for me because I've been through some hard stuff. Mm-hmm. Two divorces, you know, recovering alcoholic, prospect that failed, whatever you want, wherever you want to go with it. My dad's been there. My wife kind of took the baton from him and Carla. Now we've been married 20 years going on 21. I've been sober 1 year longer than we've been married. So there's no coincidence there. Mm-hmm. I need to find balance in the morning. My dad told me a long time ago when things got up to the bottom, because life's not fair. If you're waiting for life to get fair, you're going to wait your whole life. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. Stop worrying about fair. Start worrying about what's right. Be somebody. Become a, not just a, you know, we hear it biblically, not just a hearer of the word, but a doer of the word. What kind of life do you want to lead? What kind of legacy do you want to leave? What do you want to be remembered by the people that love you the most? Not the people you don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got people on society, they're hunting. That's all they're hunting. Likes, thumbs up, mm-hmm. You know, throw a heart on it, throw a like on it, throw a ha-ha on it. Dude, it's a relationship with the heart, life is. So he encouraged me to figure out what I wanted to do and how I needed to do it and come up with a routine that got me in a good place to be balanced starting the day. So I wake up, it's quiet time. It's for me, it's biblically quiet time in scripture. It's some daily devotionals I read. The yoga became a side task at the end with my daughter, Maddie. That was a part later when she would be up or we'd go to class, but it's really just quieting and hearing or reading and not talking. And then, you know, through a small group, we started meeting and I started sending the notes of the meeting. And it was in Colorado and there were 12 of us and I got fired and, you know, I went away. You get fired, you go away. Your swipe card doesn't work anymore. You can't get apart. And it was a couple months later, I'm in Nag's Head, the Outer Bank, my first July 4th vacation I've ever had. That one was like, I think it had been 35 years since I had one. Right. And I get a phone call. That's from one of the women that was in our group. And she's like, Clint, how are you doing? I go, I'm doing pretty good. I'm July 4th. I'm in the Outer Banks, my family. She goes, I just needed to call you and tell you I'm not doing that good. She goes, I missed our time together. I missed the leadership sessions, the spirituality, the biblical principles. I really missed the notes you would send us. I would hold on to those. And the fact that you wrote at the bottom, make a difference today. Love, Clint. She goes, I'm getting none of that anymore. You're not making a difference with me, and I don't think you love me. I didn't say anything. I said, I'm sorry. I'll get back to you. I mean, I fumbled through it, and I said, goodbye. I went back to my wife, and I told Carla what happened. So she looked at me in the eyes. She goes, well, so what are you going to do about it? I said, well, you know, that's the second woman that in my mind has just piled on me this morning. I said, I'm going to take a walk. I took a walk, and all I could think of was, like, why am I walking any longer? I know what I need to do. Kick this thing back up. You don't need to be in that group to send that group messages. You don't need to be someplace to be a motivational part of them or an encourager to them, a hope broker to them, an arm lifter to them. So I started just sending out motivational emails. It was a text at first. The number was 12. And then the number started growing. So when I got to the point where I'm sending out 1,000 text messages, you know, it's nuts, the timing. And I'm still delayed technology. So I took the next step. I started sending emails and building folders. And then the number kept growing. Then it got to the point where my wife, again, like the third time she calls me out, text, email, now email. There's companies that do this, Clint. Why don't you mail check something? Now I have a web manager. We send out close to 7,000 daily emails for encouragement. And about 5,400 for daily devotions through a program, through what I read, what I share. Other people write. I don't write at all. There's things I do share personally, but basically I'm just spreading. I'm trying to share the good. We're all hunting good. We're all hunting encouragement. We all need encouragement. And I'm trying to reach out to people like my dad reached out to me. I had people in my life when I was down and out, and I didn't think anybody was listening. When I thought I was untethered, when I thought I was lonely, I knew I was lonely and I knew I was by myself. somebody would show up and give me a pat on the back. Sometimes it's a smack on the backside. Only 3 foot difference, but both can be appropriate, Denise. You know that with your kids growing up, right? Your presentation or your timing or everything. So that's how the daily email started. ClintHurdle.com. Anybody watching, hit ClintHurdle.com. You go right to the smallest website in the world. Mm-hmm. And it tells a little bit of the story, but the numbers have picked up. Mm-hmm. A good friend ran the story nationally during COVID. We got like 2,000 more subscribers. I call them subscribers. There's no fee. And people get back to me. Actually, more get back to me now than they did before, because I think some people kind of honor the fact, well, he manages a team. He probably doesn't have time to hear from me. Now there's some that say, well, he's not managing anymore. I'm going to give him a shout out. It all works. It's all good. It keeps me hunting. It keeps me learning. It keeps me connecting, because I never read something and go, you know what? Denise needs to read this. Oh my gosh, this is so her. It's never about it. If it affects me, it touches me either. I can smell it. I can taste it. I can hear it. I can see it. There's somebody out there that's in the same spot I'm in that will benefit from it. So that's how that all started. And it has become, there was a time when I thought about Canada. The job was getting hard. I was fighting for balance in my life. And my wife just told me, you just need to do it different. You haven't, there's different tools you can use. Mm-hmm. We need your time. Don't get me wrong, but you can still do it. And Kelly McGregor would always tell me, don't ever stop doing this, till he passed away in 2010. Mm-hmm. He said, it was only a year that he was a part of it, a little over a year, maybe 2 years. He said, Clint, whatever, don't, people need this. Mm-hmm. There's people you're going to touch on a daily basis that this may be just what they need that day. So I've got plenty of encouragement to continue.
Awesome. ClintHurdle.com.
Yeah. ClintHurdle.com. And I'm one of the subscribers, I guess you could call them. I've been receiving those emails for a long time now. I think whenever you moved over to emailing them out, I remember seeing an article and I immediately subscribed, and it's become a daily ritual for me too, to check out emails. You obviously get a ton of emails every day trying to sell you something or whatever it is, but one that I always look at every single day are your emails. So I love the Make a Difference Today line. I just think that it's such a good way to like start the day off, because we're lucky. Every day is an opportunity to get better, to make the job easier for others. We have so many opportunities every day. And if we're making a difference every day, we're going to continue to grow throughout our life. And I just think having that reminder every day has really just been great for me and other people too that are subscribing to these as well. So definitely check it out at ClintHurdle.com. It's a mentality thing. I mean, if you start your day off with, bad thoughts, saying you're going to struggle or it's going to be a bad day, then chances are it might end up being a bad day. But if you think about it, let's make a difference. Let's do what we can. There might be some things that are out of our control. Let's make a difference. And I feel like having that mentality to start every day really does make a difference in every day that you live.
And it's topical, as you well know. I try, and some days it could be about parenting. Some days about relationships, leadership. Mm-hmm. There's a Wooden Wednesday. There are some staples in there that I love. John Wooden is a guy I still, the clarity, the sanity, the genius of his Pyramids of Success, that program, Wooden Wednesday. James Clear is another guy that I followed. I really appreciate, a smart guy. It's 3-2-1 Thursday. It used to be Sunday thinking, and I realized I always post them on Monday. So why don't I just make it Monday thinking from the Daily Coach? A couple guys, Michael Lombardi, who's a former NFL general manager, and George Raveling, a historic college basketball coach. So there's different places I go to kind of put in some staples, some things that I like. I think people like things to count on as well during the week. And then I always got some surprises. Mm-hmm. And some fun stuff. So I appreciate that you're on there, Andy. I appreciate, you found them to be beneficial and found them to be encouraging.
Yeah.
So, Clint, if there's one last thing that you could share with our listeners, because we've gotten so much value from you today, what would that one thing be that we want to go away with today from you?
It's not a cliche. As I get older, this is the only day we have control of. We have no control over yesterday. Mm-hmm. We can learn from it. If we pout about it, if we get anxious about it, we worry about it, we're losing today. I don't know if I'm going to make it to tomorrow. People say, oh, that's morbid. No, it's not. I don't know if I'm going to be here tomorrow. Mm-hmm. As I get older, it becomes more of a reality. One day I'm going to be right. There will be a last day for me in the future. I'm just real with it. Let's be real. I have an opportunity to do something today. A random act of kindness, of service to my wife that she's not expecting, to my kids, somebody in the street. You know, I make a habit of going through Starbucks and paying for the person behind me or something like that. Well, the other day, I go through a Starbucks and I go to pay for my drink. Somebody goes, your drink was paid for by the person in front of me. I go, that's so cool. Wow. And he goes, no, it's crazy. He goes, because it's happened like 15 cars in a row. Everybody keeps paying for the person behind me. I go, well, I'm in. I said, what's their order? Because, you know, they get the order ahead of time. He goes, I got hers. I said, as a matter of fact, get the next two and then let me get out of here. Something as simple as that. I went through and somebody bought me my drink. It was just like, wow, that's cool. What can we do today to help somebody have that, wow, that was cool. Mm-hmm. And then, that's my goal in the day, to just make the most out of today. And when I go to bed at night, I do. I pray for, I'm thankful and I'm grateful for the day I had. Mm-hmm. And I ask for, forgiveness of any amends I might need to make along the way, or if I did frustrate somebody along the way that gave me an opportunity to make up to it. It's basically, it is keeping it simple, but it's keeping it real. Mm-hmm. I need to be the best version of myself. That's the one thing that I just try and, we're in a hurry. We're in a rush. We're distracted. Yes. The sooner you can find to fight for balance, real balance in your life, the better off you're going to be. I wish I'd have found mine earlier. I didn't. I made some mistakes that caused damage over my, two divorces. Now my 35-year-old daughter's engaged to be married. She's a fiance for the first time. Her husband-to-be's 36, first time they're going to be married. That's exciting. Maddie's going to graduate in June. There's been many times we didn't know if Maddie would even be able to go to school, mainline in school, have any type of success at school. My son's on the crew team rowing a boat. His sport of passion is crew. Mm. I can't pick that. I mean, it's such a God thing for me. I mean, I'm living a life right now. Things are happening around me. They're just blowing my mind. My wife and I have fallen back in like with each other. You know, we're in love. We're called to be in love, but, we're back in like with each other. And we're planning a golf tournament. We're creating a new golf tournament that I've sent you some information on to support Maddie's birth defect, Prader-Willi syndrome. This could be a reality TV show because we're working daily on this side by side, and it's become comical at times how well we know each other on some things. And then, wow, I didn't have that. Okay, I'm sorry. I got in your space right there. It's been a blast. So any information that you can pass out to about this golf tournament that we're trying to recreate?
Yeah.
I know the website's up. It's www.stove.givesmart.com. And I think I sent you the information. Mm-hmm. So if you can post it, it's a really cool website that we've set up, and it shows all the different options. And we're just trying to impact families and kids that the playing ground's not really level. And COVID's complicated for all of us, but sometimes you never know what you can give or when you can give to help. So, I appreciate this time today. I know I'm going to walk away feeling like I need to go help my wife. I need to go do something, but it's been a pleasure, Denise, getting to meet you. Andy, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Give this some time and space. And then, if there's an opportunity to come back and help you all with something else, feel free to contact me.
No, we appreciate that. And yeah, thank you, Clint, for everything that you've shared, not only just your emails, but just hearing you speak. You're always just great to listen to. And I've learned a lot just in this session with you. And we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. And we definitely encourage everyone to check out the awesome fundraiser. We'll definitely share all the information that you have with our listeners, and we definitely encourage everyone to help as many people as you can, especially in this time. So thanks again, Clint. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, let's help one another. Let's start in the home, right?
Yeah.
And then we get to the neighborhood. That's going to be a lot. If we just start in the home and stay in the neighborhood, that'll be a lot. All right. Thank you.